Valentine's Day, everybody. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This is my first show of the day. It's 4 o'clock here in beautiful Southwest Florida, Eastern Time. My next show is at 5:30, and the last one's at 7. But I like to start off my Wednesdays with a bang. My friend J.D. Allen is with us today. She has a new book out called 19 Souls. But let me tell you a little bit about her first. She attended the Ohio State University and earned a degree in forensic anthropology and a minor in creative writing. I love that, since I am so busy reading right now all the Preston Child books, and a lot of it involves anthropology. Anyway, she said that writing mysteries was not her first career, but her second. So I can't wait to talk to her about that. Her series is called The Sin City Investigations. The new book is called 19 Souls. She is a member of every organization known to man and women, and actually goes to a bunch of different reader and writer conventions. It's my pleasure to welcome J.D. Allen to the show. Hi, J.D. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. We've been talking about doing this for, gosh, a long time now.
A very long time.
I know, when we bump each other at Sleuth Fest or, you know, at Boucher or something. Although I'm thrilled that you're going to be at BoucherCon this year in my backyard, which is going to be fun. Hey, congratulations on the release of the new book, 19 Souls. Love the title.
The cover art is absolutely beautiful.
I was so happy. I love
the cover
that
art.
Font. I love all of it. It's so perfect. Let's talk about your book. First of all, the reviews are coming in fast and hot. Your plotting and pacing will keep up long after Proust and Henry James have rocked you to sleep. Stay tuned for a series that promises many, many more troubled dreams. From Kirkus, who never gives a good review. Congratulations. And then...
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great. And more and more and more. It's a wonderful and rare combination of high-speed suspense and complex, richly drawn characters, which will keep you on the edge of your seat. From the president of MWA himself and my friend and yours, Jeffrey Deaver. And this is a man who knows really good mystery. So let's talk about 19 Souls. Tell us the premise, please.
It almost sounds like you're giving away the plot when I give you the premise, but it's not.
Okay.
What happens is I have a PI. He's in Vegas. Like many PIs, he's left another life and started over. And the other life he left was not good to him. So he's just kind of happy to get along, making enough money to buy a scotch and feed his cat. So it's not a cozy, but there is a cat. It's nowhere near a cozy. And,
thank you.
A client comes. Yeah, I do want to warn people, this is not a cozy, but the cover should give that away. You get a client come in, and she says she's looking for her missing brother. And it turns out that she's not looking for her missing brother. She's actually a female serial killer, and she is looking for her ultimate prey. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So halfway through, you know, not even halfway through the book, you know, very soon he figures out he's been duped and has got to figure out how to get himself and this man he's led her to out of peril.
It isn't often, I mean, only a few books that I have read actually have female serial killers. I think that it's a really brave thing you did to write one, because female serial killers kill for a different reason than men. And I'm sure your anthropology degrees have told you, along with your research, that that is true. Let's talk about some of their motivation, because I love this character. So, I mean, I love how well-formed.
I don't like
her actions. You know, I don't like the actions.
Well, of course.
The character's great for a thriller.
I made the conscious decision early on to write from both POVs in this story, because it just fit. So you're actually inside of her head a good deal. So you kind of understand and occasionally, hopefully, maybe even empathize with what she's going through. And of course, you know, they always say that every villain is the hero of their own story. And this is certainly the case with Sophie, you know. But in general, 95% of the time, male serial killers are killing with some kind of sexual drive. Even if the weirdness of their murders are setting up little things, it somehow gives them a sexual gratification in the killing. But what we found most of the time, there's always the outlier that women serial killers, female serial killers, kill in a much more practical way. You know, they kill to get rid of family members they don't want around. They kill because they want money. You know, they kill for people's the black widow, you know, inheritance after inheritance after inheritance. And the FBI is pretty sure that there's a lot more female serial killers out there that they don't know about, because they tend, with those more practical reasons, they don't leave as much of a trail often as the male serial killers.
They're not always as prolific either, are they?
Right, right. You can in the female serial killers, a lot of times, I don't want to use the word spree because that's a different kind of killer, but they'll go through a stage, and they may kill two or three people, and then they go on and get married, and they think they're happy for a while again, and it may 10, 15 years, another state, different kids, and then they do it again.
Right.
We
should also explain spree killing too, because the guy that killed Giovanni Versace, and I was living in Miami when that happened, was a spree killer. That's people who get a thrill out of killing other people and who just go and shoot, kill randomly. There's no, modus operandi other than the thrill of killing.
There can be spree killers. I can't remember the guy's name that used to shoot people in Washington, D.C. out of his car. It was also a spree killer. So spree killers, you know, according to FBI, you know, designations, tend to be the Las Vegas shooting was a spree killer.
Sure.
If he had left there and gone to his house and killed his wife and blah, 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 and then down the street and killed his mother and her, you know, sisters or whatever, it would still be a spree killing because it was a, like, one mass incident, but in two or three locations over a shorter amount of time.
Sure.
Connected.
Sure.
Whereas mass murder is typically, you know, what it sounds like. It's the terrorist type things where you blow up the dance hall or something. It's much more of a mass murder. But spree tends to be in a shorter period of time, and the motivation for all of them is typically the same. Whereas serial killers, it's over a longer period of time and can have shorter interval or longer intervals between killings.
Yeah.
Which is not what forensic anthropology is.
No, I understand that. But it does kind of give you a little insight into crime investigation and the remnants of crime. Because forensic anthropology is after the crime is committed, correct?
Well, anthropology applied to the law is forensic anthropology, and what I studied mostly was like the identification of remains, and usually what I would call historical or dry remains. So it's not somebody they found that's 3 weeks old. That would be more of a pathologist would do that. But I was in South Florida. I don't remember it was back in college where we found we went down with the university to help out on a dig that turned out to be like a gangland killing from the 50s.
Really?
So we determined how many bodies were actually there from the bones that were in there. The classic bullet wound in the back of the head. They were bound on their knees, probably, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, that's more of what a forensic anthropologist does.
Days of old Miami Beach and everything, you know.
right.
Jeez, that's interesting. So okay, I get forensic anthropology because it's an interesting thing. But you also have a minor in creative writing. So obviously you've always enjoyed writing, because why throw that in there? When did you first start writing?
Well, I was, You know, I grew up a dyslexic child who didn't know I was dyslexic. So I actually didn't start writing, you know, as in writing stories for a very long time. I was very verbal about storytelling. I did a lot of plays. I was, you know, wrote scripts, you know, for other people and such. But I always wanted to be a storyteller. And I did write books for my mom when I was little, but I didn't read very much back then either, because I didn't understand why I had such a hard time with it. So I kind of faked my way through school until I hit college. And then finally I had a TA of all things ask me after class, did I know I was dyslexic? And I'm like, oh, I'm good with my numbers.
Right.
He's like, no. So he had a brother who was profoundly dyslexic. So he sent me to somebody at the resource center, and my whole life changed. My whole life changed.
Really?
So I learned techniques on reading that I could read much faster and easier than I could before. And I learned techniques for writing. And I also learned that, you know, having to have somebody proofread my stuff before I turn it in isn't shameful. You know, it's just an extra step.
It's kind of necessary as a published author, though. You're always going to have someone reading your stuff.
Right. You did, but for me, at one point, it's my first drafts can be a little scary to someone who's never looked at something
right.
as dyslexic as written. Now, modern technology has helped me a lot. I have a font called Dyslexy that helps me see what I do better. And there's a Grammarly program that catches a lot of stuff, too, because I just can't see if I put a comma in, if it's in the right place or not. I know where they're.
Sure.
I mean, if you said it out loud, I can say, yeah, the comma goes there, but I can't see it always on paper. But so I've had a young lady for a long time now that writes romance novels who's been doing that work for me before I give it to agents or editors. So I actually have a full edit before it goes to my editor at Midnight Inc.
So, which begs the question, do you read your manuscripts? Do you read what you write?
I do. I try to read it out loud. I will have the computer play back a chapter, especially one that's, I have a lot of dialogue in my books.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to get the movie feel, which is why I think everyone thinks I'm so, because I'm a visual person, so I write visually. But I'll have the computer read it to me while I'm reading at the same time. And it helps me catch stuff, and it also helps me keep dialogue authentic and true.
Yes.
I write a lot of very bright, vibrant secondary characters, and I like them to have a very different voice, and it's much easier to hear that than it is to see it on the page.
How exceptional. You know, do you know Simon Wood, who lives out in California?
I do.
Who writes Mysteries and He is profoundly dyslexic. And he handwrites out his manuscripts, and his wife, who is, you know, essentially a space engineer, who translates all his stuff. He has a very interesting history. When you bump into him at one of the conferences, ask him about, we have had some really funny conversations about his dyslexia. He's so tongue-in-cheek about it. You've got to love the man. He makes you not embarrassed at all.
Yeah, I am now. Which is also not great when you're doing book signing. So,
my problems with numbers. You when you said, but I know my numbers and all. It's funny that you said that, because I am slightly dyslexic when it comes to numbers. I will see it and say it the wrong way or write it down the wrong way. So I have to always go back and check numbers. I cut and paste
patterns.
A lot.
I do okay with.
Yeah, I have to cut and paste a lot.
That's easy to do when you're not writing fresh dialogue.
Right. The dialogue, the text I have no problem with, it's the numbers. That's so funny. Listen, besides doing 19 Souls, you've participated in a couple other books. And I'd like to talk about those two because I like the grittiness of your covers. And so it looks to me like, for example, you were in an anthology called Carolina Crimes, 21 Tales of Need, Greed, and Dirty Deeds. See, that's the problem there. And so you have a short story in that anthology, and then Murder Under the Oaks, the BoucherCon anthology from 2015, which is the one in North Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Yeah, because I was there. I remember. Mm-hmm. Do you like the short story form, or do you prefer a regular novel?
I like the both. I think, you know, my short stories are typically not, I say typically because I just wrote one that will be a sneak peek into the second book in the Sin City series, if it gets published. Mm-hmm. They're different animals, that's for sure. But I've learned that writing the short story really helps me keep my dialogue and my even the internal dialogue and clean when I'm writing longer, because in your short story, if you've only got 5,000 words to do a complete mystery,
mm-hmm.
you know, and build characters and theme and setting, you've got to hit every word's got to mean something. And then when but also you really want the same thing in your longer books. You don't want a lot. You don't want to bore your reader with a lot of extra stuff in there just to make the word count. So I think every time I try to write a short story before I start a project, sometimes it's the same characters and I just write it for me to kind of get a new series or a new character in my head. I'll write their short story. And it really gets me moving, and then it reminds me when I go to that first page that needs to be 90,000 words, that all 90,000 of those need to count as well. And, you know, the reason people keep talking about pace with 19 Souls, you know, that's something I've stolen from Lee Child. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's short sentences, lots of fragments, intentional sentence fragments in there, and short chapters with a lot of action. It keeps the pace moving.
It does.
Go 5 pages and say, I want to do the next chapter, and you end up doing 5 more. You know, that's very intentionally done. I have a standalone I've written I've not found a home for yet that's written very differently. It's a whole different type of character. It's a whole different kind of book. It's got long, luxurious sentences, but it more fits the tone of what I wanted the stories to be. And short stories can help you practice that, because that's something you kind of have to learn. Stay in your voice and be able to still write different characters in different ways. You know, like Lisa Unger and Karen Slaughter, you know, these people who write a lot of standalone thrillers, you can still hear their voice even when it's a totally different story and a whole different set of characters. And that's what I try to emulate.
Right.
And I feel helped me do that.
I just mentioned that Jim Deaver gave you a beautiful review. Every time I talk to him, he reminds me that it is, and I have this written down. He said, writers should write with an economy of words. And it mm-hmm. is true, which is perhaps why, and I don't know how you feel about this, but when someone sends me literary fiction, I really don't want to read it, because it's that long, flowing narrative with a lot of background and a lot of angst, and it's, you know, it moves kind of slowly, and I just really don't care for it, to be honest with you. And
I
maybe
think
it's
a couple.
I may not be smart enough, you know.
I don't think it's smart. It's style. It's just like some people don't like coconut, and some people don't like peanut butter. You know, coconut,
right?
You know, it's just different taste. I think literary fiction can be done with lots of good heart and story, but I think sometimes it's not the intention of some literary fiction, you know,
and that might
be
true.
Genre people like a story, a beginning, a middle, and an end. They want a satisfying end. You know, romance, there's a happily ever after, and mysteries and thrillers, the bad guy gets his comeuppance. Literary fiction can just leave you with no end and still be cracked and done. But you just, those of us who really enjoy a good bite your teeth in story with a beginning, a middle, and a kick ass end, are not satisfied with that. You know,
and I think you're right. I am definitely a genre fiction girl. There's no doubt about that. And I'm pretty eclectic in my genre taste too. You know, do you remember what, JD, used to be just fiction and nonfiction and self-help when you go into a bookstore? And now, you know.
Yes, I'm that old.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm that old.
Oh, yeah. So now it's crazy, you know. But I kind of like it. The only thing I really don't like to read is horror, because it scares the crap out of me. I'm a real weenie when it comes to horror. But I like your book, and I like the premise very, very much. It occurs to me that your writing career, how long have you been writing and been published? Because you're kind of everywhere.
You're kind of involved everywhere. In early 2004, I was working for a large telecommunications company that no longer exists, basically, and so was my late husband. And in 2006, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, so we both took the package out of the same company. And
sure.
I started writing, as I say, with the intent to earn in 2006-ish. And I accidentally wrote a romance. And so this is spoopy stuff for you. And it got published, and you know, they were like, can you write another? Next thing I know, 9, 10, 11 books later, I'm like, if I have to write another romance, I'm going to slit my wrist. Nothing against romance, but it was not
you
what
didn't
I
write
to write.
J.D. Allen, then. You didn't write
no,
under
I did
Allen.
Not. No,
did
I did
you
not.
Write under a pen name? Or is J.D. Allen a pen name? Oh, okay.
Well, yes and yes.
Okay.
So Alan was my late husband's name. So when I changed over to the mysteries, I wanted to, because of him, is the whole reason that I got to start off my career on a good foot, you know, financially, and be able to take care of myself. I wanted to take his name. And JD, my name is Julie Denise. So it is my name. JD has been my nickname since I was a kid. So, and you know,
it's a great name. I like that.
But anyways.
Well, so you have a lot more books under your belt than if we go to jdallenbooks.com and find. But when I look at conferences and events, you are so a mystery thriller gal. There's just no other way to get it. Yeah, you
just don't do anything
but mystery and thriller. You're going to Sleuth Fest, which for those of you who've never gone, is a terrific reader conference. That's in Boca in Florida. Murder and Mayhem in Chicago. Left Coast, which is in Reno this year. Boy, you'll be probably almost walking in your character's footsteps. Malice Domestic in Bethesda, Maryland. Another great one. Killer Nashville in Nashville, Tennessee in August. And then I'm going to see you in September at BoucherCon, the World Mystery Conference, of which you're part of the board, correct?
Yes. I'm actually chair of the board.
How fabulous.
Conferences for writers are an amazing thing. You know, they're fun. Even if you're an introvert, I think as an aspiring author, you can do nothing better for yourself than to get yourself to writers' conferences, both for networking. You know, you mentioned Jeff. We've been friends for 10 years now.
Right,
Jeff Fever,
right.
I met him at our Writers Police Academy here in North Carolina 10 years ago. And he was keynote speaker, and I had volunteered to do the raffle basket. So I ended up emceeing his speech night and the raffle baskets, and we met and talked. Turns out he lives not too far from me. 10 years later, we're doing the Writers Police Academy again, which is not on your list because I don't think I actually have it on my thing, Writers Police Academy in Wisconsin, where he will, for their 10-year anniversary, be keynote speaker, and I'll be emceeing the auction and the party night again. So full circle.
How fun. You've really kind of just thrown your whole being in. When you were writing under a different name in romance, did you throw your whole self into RT and RWA and all those events?
I did go to RTs and RWAs. RT is a different animal. It's a lot
crazy.
Of party. It's a lot of fun.
Well,
I think it's a lot harder for newer
RWA.
Authors.
Yeah.
No,
I
RWA
went to an RWA.
Is a business conference. You know,
oh my God!
RWA is a business conference.
Oh, those people are crazy. I mean, those women are crazy. It in gigantic
oh, that was RT
halls.
Then.
Yeah, RT is that one. RWA is, there's no, it's not reader events. Like, they don't have the, you know, meet.
No, RWA is a business meeting. RT is a party.
It really
it's a week-long
is.
Party.
Yes, it is. But,
and
my
if
God.
You, if you're a big-name author,
wild.
They're good for you. It is. It can be. It can be wild. That's for sure.
Woo,
so
I have to recover from that. And I went over in July because it was in Orlando. I mean, I'm still recovering. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a different animal than going to the mystery and thriller writers, which is a ton of fun. I think you're right that writers have a tendency to be introverted, but when you kind of are in your tribe, I remember being
I love
at,
that word, tribe.
Yeah, I remember when we were in Raleigh for Boucher, and I was watching the restaurant and bar manager stand kind of at the top of the stairs in one of the two hotels where it was at. And he was standing there and on. I said, pretty amazing, isn't it? He goes, did you know these people are all writers? And I said, yes. He goes, do you ever hear how loud it is in here? And I said, yes. I said, it's the most collegial group of people you'll ever meet. They get together at these conventions and they support each other and they share ideas and information. And he said, I am amazed. He said, we have a lot of conferences in here, but none of them are as fun and laughing, no problem, and loud. I said, well, there you go. It's a writer
yeah,
conference.
I worked on, I did work on the Raleigh BoucherCon. So I was busy most of that one. And
yeah.
I tried to, you know, you always try to tell the bar people at the hotels where we're having the conferences, you know, you have to stay open late and you have to have a lot of staff, and they never quite believe you until after the first night. And then they're like, holy crap.
Exactly. You're not going to Thriller Fest this year?
Only because my daughter is due that week.
Oh, that's very important.
So I am my first grandbaby. Yes,
grandma.
Thank you.
Yes, congratulations. Let's talk. I want to ask you to please share where people can find you on the webs and all your social media.
Almost everything I have is J.D. Allen Books. There's a very famous jazz trio. I believe he's the saxophone player. It's named J.D. Allen. So if you go just to J.D. Allen, you're going to hear some great jazz music. However,
right.
jdallenbooks.com will get you to my website. J.D. Allen Author, I believe, is on Facebook. Twitter's at J.D. Allen Books. And I try to be pretty active on all of them. I love to interact with people. You know, I'm real big about helping other authors up. I'm doing speaking of RWA, next on the 10th, I believe, of March, I'm giving my CSI for Writers workshop to the romance writers group around here to help them
How fun.
Get things right in their manuscripts. I've done that for several years. So it's not too hard to find.
No, you're out there for sure. You are out there. We don't have very much time left, but I usually do five quick questions, five quick answers.
Okay.
With all my guests, are you game to play?
I am game.
Okay. So, first of all, what would we be surprised to learn about you?
That I have a skull collection?
You're kidding me. You were just so weird. You know, when I see you in person, you're this nice, normal looking woman. You know, beautiful, well dressed, well kept. Who knew you were a psycho? Jeez, really?
Yes,
a human
really. They're not like
collection?
Human. No, they're not. You. That's against the law.
How could you do that?
No.
Yeah.
No, that's against the law. Just so you know, that is against the law. No, I have like badgers and bobcats and eagles and ferrets and a coyote. And
I don't even want to know. I'm never coming to visit you if you have those in your house.
Well, when you are a forensic anthropologist, people will bring you a bone and say, "What is this?" And you have to say it's a cow femur, and you know, because they think they found a body in their backyard, and that's
right.
What you do. you know, the police bring you stuff back then. I haven't done it. I mean, I didn't do it very long. I worked in a morgue for a little bit, and then I was in the corporate world because I needed to actually make money. So
right.
Anyway, next. So
That's funny.
I got you on that one. I probably
okay.
can't follow
yes.
up with as good an
I cannot tell you there has been no one in the 1,000 author interviews that I've done, not kidding, who has told me that. So you definitely get you're right at the top of this right now. Very strange. Do you have a book, a favorite book that you will read over and over again? Maybe not in 1 year, but maybe once a year or something.
The author, you know, like the writer's book, is Stephen King's On Writing. I try
sure.
to reread that about once a year. You know, I get so many books from all the conferences and stuff. It's really hard to get back to rereading, but
I have a
you know, I like Gilstrap. I like John Gilstrap's books a lot.
Oh God! Me too.
I listened to those. If you like his, listen to him. Basil Sands reads those characters, and you know, yeah, I love those books. I think I have re-listened to those a couple of times.
I loved
and Karen.
That's one of my favorite series. Yeah.
Karen Slaughter, I've reread several of her books too in the last few years.
Cool. Do you have something on your bucket list that you'd care to share?
Oh God, I feel like my bucket list is really long. I have yet.
So what?
Even though I'm married to a British man, I have yet to get myself to Europe, and I know it seems silly. I've been all over North and South America, but I have not crossed the pond yet. I really want to go to the UK and to Ireland and to, you know, Scotland and Italy. So that's a big one. That's probably
there is a big one. In an alternate universe where there are no writers, what job would you like to do?
Well, I tried the medical profession before my anthropology stuff, but the dyslexia was not any good for that. I always thought I'd, you know, be good at helping people, but I guess a teacher. I still have like all my college work, and my daughter makes fun of me, and I'm like, well, what happens after the apocalypse? Who's going to teach everybody everything again?
After the apocalypse, there will not be a book, honey. So unfortunately,
well, I don't know, that's my idea.
When you think about yourself as a little girl, what did you want to be when you grow up? And are you happy with what you turned out to be?
I wanted to be Marilyn Monroe so bad. I was an actress. I was a tomboy too. I could do all, you know, I could fish and I could hunt and I could shoot and I could do all those things because my dad taught me to do all those things. But I would watch those old movies and was just mesmerized by the actresses. And, you know, again, it was I couldn't communicate on paper well, but that was the way I could memorize and communicate verbally. And that seemed like the best thing in the world to me. And I did theater all the way up to college.
Wow. You've had a diverse and exciting and wonderful life. I'm so glad that we know each other in person. Even though you collect skulls, I still think they're pretty cool.
I don't make them dead. I just get them after. They've all died of another death that was not at my hands. How's that? Does that help?
I understand that. It's still a weird thing to do, you know. So, J.D. Allen, are you on book tour, or where is your next event going to be? Sleuth Fest, correct?
Well, at Sleuth Fest and Murder and Mayhem and at Left Coast Crime, I'll be doing signings and events and, you know, speed dating and stuff like that. I do have a noir at the bar May 3rd here in Durham. And
good.
Anything else, that I just had a really cool release party with an awesome cake here in Raleigh last week. So that's all been really exciting.
Oh, I remember seeing the picture of it. Yeah, I remember seeing the picture. Very good. It has been such a pleasure talking to you after all the times we chat. I can't wait to see you again. I probably won't be until voucher in September, but I'm looking forward to it no matter what. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks
you as well. Thanks
so much for being my guest, and we'll talk again soon. Okay.
All right. Thanks so much, Kim.
Thanks, JB. See ya.
Bye.